talk New York sports here. The Fan.
Big Monica here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Little Bon Jovi to get us going. When's his next, when's his nine-hour documentary coming out on HBO? I still haven't finished the Billy Joel one.
He had a docuseries on Hulu.
Oh, did he? Oh, I got to check it out. I still haven't quite finished the Billy Joel one. We've been breaking, you know, I have no time, man. I feel
and
bad.
Actually, I don't know if the Bon Jovi one was about his life. It might have been about, like, the making of one album.
Oh, okay. You know, with all the baseball, now even Friday nights, that's the one thing, again, I love doing the Saturday show. I've mentioned this a bunch. I love doing the Saturday show. Love it. Yeah, Freddie and Rockland, if you're listening here, I'm going to complain about the Saturday show for a second. I love the doing the Saturday show, but it is even now another night. Friday night used to at least be a night where I could like say, okay, honey, what do you want to watch? You want to watch something, do something. I'll watch the Yankees and Mets tomorrow. No big deal. But now with the Saturday show, I kind of got to watch them that night. So like we've lost Friday night as the television show night. So we really like, we've been trying to squeeze in the Billy Joel in between Yankee and Met games. So I haven't quite finished it yet. I think we're up to the, We Didn't Start the Fire becoming a number one hit. I think that's where we were. His former brother-in-law manager just stole all his money, and now he's out there touring to make all the money back. And Stormfront just came out, and We Didn't Start the Fire is a big hit. So that's where I am right now in the Billy Joel documentary. It's been excellent. I don't know why Bon Jovi made me think Billy Joel, but it's been really good. I've enjoyed it. And I'm waiting for, like, they really haven't done the Beatles documentary that they did themselves, the 94 Beatles anthology, that documentary was incredible. I always say it's the best, like, $80 I've ever spent in my life for all those DVDs. I don't know where they are now. We don't have DVDs anymore. And I haven't seen it streamed anywhere. But if you have a chance to watch the Beatles documentaries of, anthology DVDs, incredible. But I'm waiting for their movies to come out. Four Beatle movies coming out over the next handful of years. So looking forward to that. But the Billy Joel documentary was great. It really was. He's a fascinating character. Fascinating guy. A lot of early life stuff. And it was very good. If you haven't seen it, it's on HBO Max or whatever it's called now. Max. 888-808-1019.
It's actually HBO Max again.
Is it HBO Max again now? Oh, my God.
You're gonna see that when because they got announced like a couple months ago.
Yeah,
as a rebrand, going back to the name it never should have not been.
Yeah, I don't understand. And by the way, so I was just talking, and someone, I can't believe I forgot this. He just sent it to me. Someone just sent me. I was just talking about WWE. Apparently, and I'll put this under the category of for now because I don't have much faith in this. But apparently, if you are a subscriber to, you know, ESPN via your TV, whether it be Fios or in my case Optimum, or you know, if you get it through Hulu TV or whatever, but if you subscribe to ESPN already through a cable provider, you will be able to have access to the app for WWE stuff automatically. It'll be free, so you don't have to pay the $30 for the app if you subscribe to ESPN, which is very much like, you know, some other things, like HBO Max. If you have HBO through your cable provider, you can just get the HBO Max through your cable provider. I don't think it's free necessarily, but it is, right? It's free. Or like right now, for I obviously have USA. I can log into the USA app so I can put SmackDown on for the kids on the other TVs. So like, but ESPN, I'm surprised, is going to allow premium. You can watch WrestleMania for free as long as you have ESPN. That's not bad. So maybe it'll be a positive. But so apparently that's what
it
I was
just
told.
Means they're going to raise the price of having actual ESPN.
ESPN, yeah,
on cable.
I'm sure. Yeah, and I'm sure that's for like the first year. Now you have to pay. Like, I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, you get it for free, but if you have Optimum, that bill's going up $5.
Exactly. I'll take $5. Believe me. I guess a month. That's more than, yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, Chris. Yeah, the Billy Joel documentary is excellent.
It was really good. It was. It was excellent.
I think it's interesting how the song Piano Man is actually him playing piano in these little dive bars in Hollywood when he couldn't get work at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, and he had to go under a pseudo name because the contract had rights to his name, so he had to go under, like, he was fighting a terrible contract he signed. He refused to do things for them, so he had to, like, he wasn't allowed to work with another recording company for a while, so he had to go just play in piano bars, yeah. A lot of different things about the songs and how they were directed at people and things. It was interesting. I thought it was, and his change of style. And I also didn't know, like, because the critics hated him. Like, that was the other thing. Like, I remember, I was watching him, like, really? I don't remember the 70s and 80s all that well, and certainly what the musical critics were writing back then. But, like, I just assumed everyone liked Billy Joel. The idea that a lot of his stuff was panned and they thought he was, you know, always trying to find other sounds instead of his own because he did, you know, some doo-wop stuff in the 80s and he did, you know, he changed his style so much that they felt like it was hard to have an authentic Billy Joel sound. And I had no idea all that stuff. It was interesting to see.
Yeah. And you're too hard on your own singing. You're better than Danny Zuko on a cruise ship, man.
I think that's pretty good.
I can see you pulling off Guys and Dolls. You'd be a great Nicely Johnson. You're made for that role, man.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
That's you. Now, about my Mets. If I hear one more person say rock bottom now is the term. We're not even close to rock bottom. This is a rock bottom. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're like the Seeds with injuries and we fall totally out of it, that would be rock bottom. This is an awful stretch we're going through. And we talked at the beginning of the year. I mean, if you would have told me that this lineup, we were talking about this lineup being as good as anybody but the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So nobody saw this coming.
Yeah.
So this isn't a Stearns thing. This is just, you added Soto to pretty much the same team. I don't know why they're not hitting. And I didn't want to see a no-hitter yesterday. Anybody who says we want to see a no-hitter, you got to be out of your mind. Why would you want to see your team no-hit at home? I mean, what would we gain out of that? You think they would have rallied around that because they got no hit? It doesn't make a difference. It wouldn't have made a bit of a difference. I was ecstatic when he hit that home run. I mean, you know, especially Soto. Maybe this gets him started now. Maybe. I don't know.
I think it's, you never know. I think it's just as unlikely as the no-hitter sparking them. Like, it's just, you know, it's one at-bat, it's one home run. And he's the king of the solo home run. I was watching a little bit of
very strange.
I know. Evan was calling him Juan Solo on the on the podcast. Yeah,
I
20. He's got 26 home runs now. 20 solo home runs, and six two-run shots. He has 0 3-run, 0 grand slams.
And I tell you, Yankees are gonna make the playoffs.
I think so too, but they're in flux right now.
Texas is an interesting team. With those top three starters and that bullpen, if they get a couple of bats hot and, you know, manager like Bochy, who, you know, everybody makes too much about the managers. I mean, Joe Girardi, everybody wants Joe Girardi. He lost his job. Thompson came in and took the same team to the World Series.
Yeah.
It's not the manager. It's really not.
No.
The Yankees can win with Boone. They really can.
I don't disagree with you. I think they absolutely can win with Boone. Now, will they? I don't know. And does that mean he's done a good job this year? No, he has not. Like, I'll be the first to admit it. I think he's done a bad job this year. This team should be far better. This team should be far better. And it's not just the mistakes on the field. It isn't. I'm less on that than I am just the overall vibe and the way they respond and the manner in which they play and the level of fight that they have. And we've seen a little bit more of it. As of late, offensively at least, I don't know. I just think he's done the idea of, like, Booney ball being the problem, I really, that's secondary to just overall how they've performed, how they've won and lost, and whether or not, you know, they've had that right mentality. I feel like he's had a tough time tapping into this team to get them in the right mentality since they started losing. That's more of my issue than it is, you know, he doesn't pull Jazz off the field for a boneheaded play. But I know many disagree with me. That's fine. I think accountability has just become a fun word to say that everybody, like, I'm not saying there is no such thing as accountability or that it's not important. It's just, you know, the idea that it's the most important thing for a team is very easy to say right now. Like, I don't think it is. I don't think the idea that, you know, you have to, if you make a boneheaded mistake, you're going to get pulled off the field. Like, because again, Does he hold them accountable behind the scenes? Well, like, yeah, does he get on guys? I'm sure. Does he pull guys off the field? No. Are there other managers who don't? Yeah. Do they win? They could. Steve in Rockland. What's up, Steve?
Well, he certainly held Bert accountable. I mean, they sent him to, you know, they sent him to AAA. I think that sent a message on some level.
Yeah, maybe. I also think cutting DJ sent a message. I think releasing Marcus Stroman should send a message. Like, you know, it's, I don't care how much money you make. I don't care what we thought you were, or, you know, it's best roster. Let's go.
You know, that's accountability in the luxury tax era, I guess.
Yeah.
But, Chris, how about today, Chris? How about, you know, what was the difference in the game? Differences in the game is that run that scored on the errant throw to third on the double steal.
Yeah.
Fundamentals.
Yeah.
Right? That's number one. But how about this? You know what I thought was very interesting? This is what I was thinking, that he shut off the communicator, he took the analytics notebook, and he put it away, and he went out to the mound and said, could you please do this? Are you going to do this? And they did it. And he did it.
Well, I don't know if Bednar apparently told him, like, he went out there to take him out, and Bednar convinced him otherwise. So,
yeah, about that.
Yeah, I agree. No, I mean, listen, I think it's definitely against the analytics. It's definitely a gut check moment where he decided to stick with his guy. We've seen it before, but that was a real good, that was a good move by Boone. It worked out. Thankfully, it did. But
yeah,
again, having said this, Steve, if Garcia laces one down the line and they lose the game, we're all kicking him for leaving Bednar in the game.
Like, that's just how
it works.
You know what, Chris? That didn't happen today.
It didn't happen today. Yep.
It did not happen. And you know what? And how about pinch hitting? I mean, that was, you know, when that ball went over the fence, when Goldschmidt hit that home run, I said, you know what? I got a feeling that no matter what happens here, no matter what kind of tightrope they got to walk, this is going to be a win.
I did not have that same feeling.
Okay.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. Over the last couple of days, and the way they played, how many big home runs have they? Look at what happened Friday night. How could you not think they were going to find a way to win that game? They're up 6-0. They score 4 runs. Boom, we'll make it 9-4. Oh, they come back, take the lead. Oh, we'll retake the lead. Or we'll tie the game with a Volpe home run, and then we'll score 2 runs in the top of the ninth. Like, who didn't think they were going to win that game? So, like, the idea that, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm not, you know what? That was debacle. But just the way it was, and you know, the worms got to turn sometime, Chris. You know?
No, I mean, listen, I agree. I'm hoping it turned yesterday. I did. I'm just telling you, I had a tough time thinking the minute that ball went over the fence that by hook or by crook, the Yankees are winning today. I did not feel that way. I mean, I knew they had a chance, and I knew the bullpen, you know, had Bednar in it. I wasn't sure who else he was going to use. Weaver went back-to-back days. Doval went back-to-back days. You're not going to use, obviously, Williams anyway, but he went back-to-back days. Like, you had Leiter, you had Hill, and you had Duvall. Ended up who they were using. Like, that's it. And it's only a 1-run lead. So I'm not trying to knock you. Good for you. I'm glad you felt that way, and I'm glad you were right. I'm just saying, in the moment, with the way it's been going, it was hard for me, with a 1-run lead in the 7th, to feel like, okay, we're good. Like, I was terrified up until the end of the game. And I amaze myself over and over again. Let me just tell you how impressive I am. Well, I have you here for a few minutes. I am so amazed at my ability to just get immersed in the game and completely forget that I'm watching it 4 hours after it happened. Like, I'm amazed. Like, it's so easy for me. I don't fast forward through anything. A little bit. I fast forward through a little bit. But obviously the commercials and everything. But like, I don't check my phone. I don't, like, as far as I'm concerned, that game is on right then and there. And I don't fast forward to get to the end. I don't want, oh, I can't see this. I can't watch. Like, I watch every, and I'm just like, I'm pacing like that game was live. I could have easily just turned it off and looked at my score. Like, but I watch it the exact same way hours later. I don't know what it is. I have my brain mentally prepared to watch things on DVR. A lot of people tell me, I can't watch sports on DVR. How could you watch sports on DVR? I don't know. It is easy for me. I am immersed. In that final moment with Bednar on the mound, I was pacing. I had my little foam Yankee bat that the kids used to play with when they're little that I kind of hold in my hand and swing around and, you know, hit myself in the head with when I'm mad. When I'll tell you this right now, I almost gave myself a concussion when Jock Peterson hit that home run off of Devin Williams. I had that stupid foam bat in my hand. I was just whapping myself in the head with it. I'm a crazy person. I'm a crazy person. But I watched those games on DVR easy. I am in it. My heart was pounding through my chest after it was like 9, 10 o'clock at night. The pitch that should have been called strike three to end the game against Seager, I screamed. And my wife looked at me, the kids were, and she's like, what are you yelling about at 10 o'clock at night, you idiot? Like, I'm just like, I'm sorry. Like, I went, no! Like, loud. And she was like, this year is different. I'm like, I know it's different. This year is different. It's different. She's like, you're never like this in August and July. I'm like, I know. This year is different. Can't have these losses anymore. It's got to stop. It's got to stop. I told you, she said to me last week, I was cracking up. She was like, why is World Series Chris in my living room right now? And I'm like, I know. I shouldn't be World Series Chris. I shouldn't be the maniac of postseason baseball. Like, it's just a game in July, but these games are too important. But she had me laughing with that one. She kind of broke the ice. She was like, why is World Series Chris in our living room right now? And I'm like, I don't know. They're certainly not in the World Series, that's for sure. Stuart in Brooklyn, what's up, Stu?
Finally, victory.
Victory!
It's about time, right?
Yes.
The son decided to learn, he learned how to manage a game.
Isn't that amazing? Or maybe he just... Maybe he always knew how to manage a game, and you only remember the games you feel like he didn't manage.
Yes.
This will all be forgotten.
The pressure.
Yeah.
The pressure of New York. You got to admit that. The pressure of New York gets to be sometimes overbearing. Look what it did to guys like Pavano or Ed Whitson getting into a fight with Billy Martin back in 1978 where Billy Martin beat the daylights out of him. I mean, come on. The pressure of New York sometimes gets overbearing. Look what it's done to Devin Williams.
Yeah.
3 years, the past 3 years, 26 earned runs. This year, not as many games, 26 earned runs.
Yeah.
The pressure is a cooker. How many players have been able to overcome it? Yeah, a lot of them, sure. But when some of them are not capable of doing it, then it shows up, and at the worst given times.
Yeah. Well, for a closer, it's never a good time, but yes.
No, it's never a good time for a closer. And Bednar last night stood up and said, mine.
Yeah.
I mean, who else did that to a manager recently? In recent memory, telling the manager to go back to the dugout.
Messina, the one...
Joe Torre.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a good thing. That's definitely a good thing. He said, it's my game. And you want to know what? More players should be like him. You know, just stand up for what you believe in and get it done.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think there are, and you had a little feedback there whenever I spoke. So I'm going to let you go. I hear you, and more players should be. Listen, more players probably are like that and get told, no, you're coming out of the game. And let's be honest. You want to bring up Mike Messina? How about Harvey? How about Harvey talking, saying, this game is mine. Ain't no way you taking me out of this game. I'm going to go out. I'm going back out there for the ninth. And we are all very critical of Terry for letting him go out there and not using his better judgment and taking him out of the game and going to Familia. So... there's good, there's bad. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. He had to go out there and finish it. I'm impressed that he said he wanted to stay in the game, but that's not what is all. The most important thing is he got the final out. Because again, telling you right now, Stu, you want to hear? Hey, ready? Here's my impression of a Stewart in Brooklyn call after Bednar is left in the game, and then Garcia hits a home run, and the Texas Rangers walk it off, and Bednar is off the field. Throwing 40-plus pitches, throwing that final pitch, lost the game, walking off the field. This is the call I would get. Stuart in Brooklyn on the fan. What's up, Stu?
You know, Chris, he did it again. The manager blew it again. He left Bednar in. He threw 40 pitches, Chris. 40. He had Duvall waiting in the throws 99 miles an hour, and he stuck with the guy, and he gave up the home run, and now we're screwed, Chris. Now we got to play the Astros? Are you kidding me? I mean, are you kidding me? They got to fire Boone, Chris. They got to fire him. The season's lost, Chris. That would have been the Stewart and Brooklyn call had Bednar given up the home run. That Boone's an idiot, and how do you leave him in there? He threw 40 pitches. He gave up a walk and a base hit. You got to get him out. So it's a fine line. That's, you know, it's a fine line. It's a good decision because he got the out. Would have been a terrible decision if he didn't. That's it. That's how it works. Mike in the Bronx. What's up, Mike?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. And listen, I don't want to take up too much time. I've watched the Yankees since I was a little boy chewing on the cord, you know, listening to it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the Yankees. I've watched them my whole life.
Gotcha.
You know, but Boone, and he made a good decision by leaving Bednar in. He finally had balls enough to say, this is my man, and do it. And normally, when he came out to shake him out at the end, I was like, if you bring that other guy in, you're going to lose the game. He makes a lot of moves. I could think of 7 to 10 games this year where they lost because of him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably far too much. But
maybe 7. But I mean, like things, simple things. Like simple things like that. I love Willy Wonka, Will Warren. He's great. He's a young kid. Mm-hmm. One time he was going to pitch to the third time to batters. And you know his analytics and his crap. The third time hitters are hitting 300. He leaves him in the sixth inning to face the batters a third time. He gives up 2 singles, and they lose that game 3-2. He knows when they score 5 runs, they're like 40-20. But whenever he's winning 3-2 and Volpe's up after a walk to Dominguez, he won't bunt to get an extra run. He doesn't have common sense.
No, I mean,
he makes impulsive decisions a lot. And I'm saying the common thread between them losing, going into a slump every year, is the manager, because you know they have more than enough talent.
Yeah, well, again, the slump last year, the manager also pulled them out of it and went to the World Series.
Yeah, okay, that, I'm so glad that you mentioned the World. Thank you.
Please,
I'm so glad that you mentioned the World Series, because here's one decision, one thing, I never like to look backwards.
Yeah.
Like you lose a dog, you don't look at old videos, you adopt another dog and move forward. I don't want to look backwards, but when Boone left in Nestor Cortez, instead of bringing in a tall, lanky, imposing Tim Hill, that's the kind of dumb moves he made.
Well, again, he didn't leave it. He couldn't take out Nestor Cortez.
He couldn't because of the 3 batters?
Correct. The question would be to go to somebody else instead of Nestor Cortez. He could not take out Nestor Cortez. Nestor Cortez had to face, once he was in the game, he had to face Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman. So, You say you don't want to look back. The entire call was looking back at Boone over the last of this regular season. And then the World Series, like, look, I get it. And to be fair, too, yesterday, the idea he didn't want to go to Leiter off a long break with an injury, and yet he would, in game one of the World Series, go to Nestor Cortez after not pitching for 30 days. I get it. I do think those are two different situations, and Nestor Cortez had earned earned something with the New York Yankees when obviously, you know, Devin Williams or Mark Leiter, you know, hasn't. Devin Williams hasn't. I think he was on the roster for that one particular, we don't have to revisit the World Series, but he was on the roster for that one particular out. Like, he was on the roster because he had good numbers against Ohtani. That's why. And as good as Hill has been, just throwing nothing but sinking fastballs to Shohei Ohtani is probably not the best way to get him out. And he came in and he got Ohtani out. And then he couldn't get Freeman out. We all know it. You can hate the move if you want. I don't hate it. It didn't work out. Could have easily went to Hill. I don't think it's the no-brainer everybody thinks it is. I think it was a reasonable decision, but it was the wrong one because it didn't work. And Tim Hill was doing great for them in that postseason. But it's many people say this. Like, it's not like he made the decision to let Nestor Cortes pitch to Freddie Freeman. That wasn't the decision. It's not like he could have taken him out, brought in somebody else. Like, it wasn't just, oh, here comes Freddie Freeman, let me go to him instead of Tim Hill. He brought him in to face Ohtani and Mookie Betts, the right-handed hitter. And as we saw in this game last night, right-handed hitters get a good look at Tim Hill. So in that moment, he's thinking, I brought Nestor Cortes on this roster, this postseason roster, because he can get out Ohtani. And then after that, I have to get out Mookie Betts, a dangerous right-handed hitter. And I would trust a starting pitcher who's gotten out a ton of right-handed hitters, as opposed to a lefty that who throws one pitch that right-handers get a good look at. That was his thought process. You can think it's wrong. I know everyone does, because Freddie Freeman hits the home run after you have to walk. And never, well, he didn't face Mookie Betts. Yes, because the pop-up that he got from Ohtani took the left fielder, why am I blanking on his name right now, with a V, hated him, we all hated him, he's out of baseball, Verdugo, took Verdugo into the stands and opened up first base, so they walked Mookie Betts. We don't have to revisit that. But the idea that Boone, I mean, it's so easy to say that decisions don't work out. That's it. I mean, he lost the game Friday night. He could have went to Will. I thought he should have went to Williams. Now, what if he brought in Williams? Williams blows every situation. So he went to Duvall. They just got him. He went to Bednar. He blew the game. Duvall blew the game. Like, it's so easy to say these decisions are wrong. You bring it back to one game where he left Will Warren in your mind too long and it cost him the game. You want him to bunt all the time. Nobody bunts. You say he lacks common sense. When is the last time you watched a baseball game that the New York Yankees played and the other team bunted in a spot like that? When is the last time you saw anybody else bunt? They played the Cincinnati Reds, went to overtime. The Cincinnati Reds had the lead in the bottom of the inning. Did I say overtime? Extra innings. You know what I'm saying. They went to Cincinnati and the great Terry Francona, who even I would tell you is a far better manager than Aaron Boone. They got into extra innings. They had the lead in the bottom. They had tie game in the bottom of the 10th. The Yankees didn't score, and they didn't bunt the runner over to third. With the lead. Or, you know, with an opportunity to score and go home and didn't bunt. Like, please stop. Please stop. Aaron Boone has done a bad job because the team hasn't responded, not because of any one individual move. And he hasn't cost them 7 or 8 games with those individual moves. He just hasn't. He has not done a great job this year. I'm not defending him. Yesterday I was saying he could be fired and I'd be fine with it. But, like, he didn't bunt Volpe yesterday? That's not why they lost. Well, that wouldn't have been the right move there. I do think Volpe should have taken a pitch and let Dominguez steal a base. I do agree with that. And then maybe you could bunt him over to third to get that extra run. But you want to sacrifice bunt to go into the bottom of the order? I don't want to do that. You want to just bunt him over to second base and then have the 9 hitter come up? I don't know. When you already used a lot of your pinch hitters.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan on the Odyssey iHeart and TuneIn apps.
All right, 3:37. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Got you for a little less than an hour and a half as we take you to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. We'll get back to the calls right here. A lot of baseball today. Maybe a little bit of football talk, as the Jets offense is going to be an interesting case study this year. As we get ready for football season, we got games coming this weekend. And, you know, as I spun the wheel of quarterback and everything during the offseason, the Jets were getting ready to pick their quarterback, and they went with Justin Fields, who, if you remember, on the wheel of quarterback, did not get a good grade. And right now, struggling. Now, again, it's camp, but from pretty much everyone there, they're struggling to get a passing game going. Now, again, Justin Fields, we know what his strengths are. He's also dealing with a toe injury. But the camaraderie between him and Wilson was supposed to be kind of baked in a little bit, having been college teammates. But to me, here's the question, right? The football team with the New York Jets is so specifically about culture this year. It's so specifically about building something. It's so specifically about the coach's influence and the idea that they were poorly coached before and now they need to be better coached now. And they're going to be. And there's more competition at camp. And it's about building something, which is important in football. There's no doubt. And that is step one and is something this team's been lacking without question. But you also need to be a team that is, and you know the defensive ability, but you're going to have to be offensively dynamic in some way. And, you know, it's about running the football. We'll see what he's available. But you're going to have some kind of passing game. And I just don't know what Justin Fields. Now, the offensive line on paper should be one of the best in the sport. Hopefully gives him time back there. In today's NFL, if you have time and some talented receivers, they're going to get open. He's had trouble reading the defense in his career. His arm strength is good, but his accuracy is under question as well. And right now, it's just, it could take some time. And my only point with culture is easy to talk about. And culture is easy to instill before there's actual real competition and scores and winning and losing. And then you get out there and the offense isn't, you know, ready to go to start. It took some time to get it together. He got a toe injury. Suddenly he's not playing well. Everybody's geared up for the run. 8 men in the box. You struggle offensively. You lose football games. It's hard to build that culture while you are losing. And this whole season is built on the idea of building culture. So I do think it's an interesting dynamic. They have, again, it's important to get off to a good start. They don't have to win a ton of games. Like, I don't know what the expectations are for this team or what you're expecting, or clearly he doesn't come with a playoff mandate or anything like that. But when it's all about culture, you want to see results early because culture is a tough thing to define while losing. And right now I'm concerned that this offense is going to be an obstacle to them winning football games. And we've already seen, you know, I was watching, you know, and for what it's worth, it's, you know, it is what it is. It's camp, right? I'm not trying to make a huge deal out of it. I'm just saying what we're seeing now does pique my concerns. And, you know, reading some of the, I saw Connor Hughes put out, you know, the drives, the 2-minute drives, and there's penalties in it. Like, these are things you don't want to see early because, again, we will start to losing and penalties. Now you're questioning culture. So I just think when you decide to bring in a quarterback like this and he becomes a project quarterback and you're trying to find your franchise quarterback and you give him a chance and you talk about how talented he is and you're going to be running the football. And certainly, hey, they might come out and run a power offense, you know, have a really good defense that limits it, keep you in the games, win some games late, and you go about building culture. But building culture is tough when you're not winning. Building culture can be a hell of a lot harder when you don't score touchdowns. I think it's nice to talk about culture. I think it's important to have culture. I think he's instilling something that the team has been lacking for years, no doubt. Got to score touchdowns. And I'm concerned that they have a quarterback who's made tremendous plays and has shown great athleticism. But when it came down to it, last year with a coach that knows about winning and knows about culture and knows about scoring touchdowns and how important offense is, went right to Russell Wilson despite them winning football games. I can't shake that. I can't shake the idea that Mike Tomlin went away from winning football games with Justin Fields to go to Russell Wilson at the end of his career. And then stuck with Russell Wilson as he was struggling and that offense was terrible. I can't shake that. I don't know why. I'm having a tough time shaking the idea that one of the best coaches in the NFL chose to stay away from a quarterback who was 4-2 in the 6 games he played to go to Russell Wilson and never even broached the subject of bringing him back, even as the team was floundering heading into the playoffs. I can't shake that idea. But we'll see how it goes.
And he's already talked about playing a lot in the preseason. I think he should, as long as his health permits. Same thing for the Giants, as we're hearing struggles with their passing attack too. I think Russell Wilson should play some in these preseason games. I know you're going to see Dart plenty, but I think you should absolutely, you know, new team, new everything, end of his career, trying to make sure he's ready to go. You want to keep him healthy, no doubt, but you got to get off to a good start, and Russell Wilson needs to know that better than anybody, because who knows how quickly they'll be willing to pivot to their first-round pick if things don't go well for them offensively and winning-wise. So I think you're going to see both quarterbacks play a little bit in the preseason. I think I would if I were them. And then the other big one is Shedeur Sanders is starting for – I got to be honest. I'll be rooting for Shedeur Sanders, as he's going to be the starting quarterback in the preseason for Cleveland. I'm not saying he's not the reason for his drop. He treated the draft incredibly poorly. Him and his father are at fault in many ways for why he fell where he fell. But that doesn't change the fact that I felt bad for the guy. I do think he's talented enough. I wanted the Giants to draft him. I think he's talented enough to be, you know, a much higher pick than he was. And I'm looking forward to him getting a chance to prove himself wrong, prove everybody wrong. So that would be an interesting game. You got to check out Cleveland's first drive or first quarter to get our first look at Shedeur Sanders, who really was, you know, the most fascinating part of the offseason, watching his fall from grace. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls, though, on the baseball. Eric and Ronkonkoma. What's up, Eric?
Morning, C-Mac. How you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. First off, happy birthday to Stuart. In case you're still listening, hopefully.
Is it Stu's birthday?
Yes, today's his birthday.
Oh, I didn't know that. Birthday. Happy birthday, yeah. Stu.
Yeah. It just so happened that night a couple of years ago in 2022 when we all got together with the overnight group, went to the Mets game, turned out it was his birthday. It worked out great.
Oh, awesome. So I didn't know that. Cool. So happy birthday to Stu.
Yeah. and by the way, real quick, I understand what you're saying about the extra overnight leading into the Saturday morning. You know, the working the schedule I do, I feel like I'm living one long Groundhog Day, so I get it.
Yeah. Well, it's not even so much that. I was just saying I felt bad for my wife and the time spending with her.
Well, you try to plan things, yeah. I mean, it's difficult.
Even Friday night, I either have to, you know, we try and watch things early so then I can watch the games late at night, but then I'm jeopardizing one of the 2 days that I really have an opportunity to sleep normal hours and get some good sleep. Right. So it's like, it's just, you know, I'm trying to still figure it out. It's been, a month and a half, 2 months into it. Friday nights used to just be the easy night. We would watch whatever, go to sleep whenever. I'd sleep till whenever on Saturday, and now that's changed. And well worth it. I love doing the show, but it's just, you know how it is in the overnight. Yeah, we talk about my life, and that's what's going on in my life.
Right. And everyone else's. I've been arguing with my nephew a lot the last few days. We're both Mets fans. Die hard and everything. I mean, he went to the game the other day. I think the same day that things went was, I guess, 2 days ago, whatever. But, his thing is he desperately wants to get rid of Chavez. I've always maintained that I'm not a big fan of Hefner. You know, I mean, one way or the other, I mean, it feels like you need to do something to shake this team up. I know we talked about, you know, it gets mentioned with the Yankees, too. You know, with them, if they're looking to get rid of Boone, personally, I think, I mean, they're not going to get rid of Mendoza yet. I mean, it's too early into, especially after last year. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I do think a lot of those coaches that he has with him are not necessarily his. He came in after they were here. If they were to shake up the coaching staff and let him pick his own coaches, might not be a bad thing. But, my thing with I tell my nephew, I'm like, these guys are supposed to be professional hitters. Do you think they, you know, go down to the minors, you know, some of these guys like Vientos and Beatty, and they hit the cover off the ball, they come up here, you think they automatically, you know, forget what they learned down there and they're looking at Chavez differently? I mean, but the thing, I've had issues with Hefner for a while, and it's reflecting again this year, is like they have the most walks in the whole National League, I don't know how much on the pitching staff it is that these guys can't go, you know, deep into games. That's a general problem in baseball.
Yeah, you know? It's part of the problem is that those are the pitchers he's been given. I mean, it's hard to have a problem with Hefner with what they've done over the last year. Sure, could it always be better? Could they walk less guys? I mean, He turned Griffin Canning into an under 3 ERA. I mean, now I'm not saying he did it alone, but I mean that was rather impressive. Now who knows where he'd be today if he never tore the Achilles? Maybe he would no longer have an ERA that low. I don't know, but that was pretty impressive. And what he's done, you know, over the last couple of years, the Mets pitching, it's tough to get on him. Of course, you could point to certain things, sure. But, and right now, like, I just think those are the pitchers they have. They're transitioning a reliever into a starter, and he's at innings limits he's never been at before. You know, and they're trying to ease him through it. Plus, they also have a really good bullpen. In these games where they're losing 8 and 9, you want to get to the best part of your team. The best part of the team is the bullpen, as opposed to letting guys go through the lineup three times. Like Clay Holmes, we talked about it yesterday. It was an opportunity for Soto to come in and face the lefties. Also, it was the third time through the lineup, and it was the same part of the lineup that got him for the runs in the second inning. Like, I don't know if you want, do you want Clay Holmes to face that part of the lineup when you specifically went out and traded the deadline to get arms to get those guys out? Like, I know he only had 75 pitches, but sometimes it's about the matchups. It's not just about, oh, he could still go. Yeah, he could. But is that what's best? Sometimes, yes. Yeah. Sometimes it's they throw 100 pitches in 4 innings and they're out and you wish they did more. And sometimes it's just he went as far as we think it's best for him to go. And, you know, Senga has been dealing with stuff. Plus, you know, he's coming from a league. I know it's a couple years now, but he's coming from Japan where they pitch every 6 day. And, you know, it's just different. And he's coming off multiple injuries, missed all of last year practically. This year he's got, you know, another hamstring injury, so he's coming into his own. Plus, he strikes out a lot of guys, throws a lot of pitches. Manaea is just coming back from injury. So, like, you're dealing with a handful of pitchers that you're being careful with, as well as guys who haven't done this a lot, as well as guys who are struggling from injury. And you got guys in your bullpen that you feel good about, and you went out and acquired at the deadline. So, it's not about the pitching, man. It's just not. We could talk about it, but it's just not.
Like, on the heels of that, is there a Mets pitcher you would say has performed below expectations? Because it's really hard to think of one.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess because they made it the first signing and paid him $17 million.
I guess Montas, yeah.
You could say Montas. That's it.
But we also knew, because anybody who's watching him, you knew there was a good chance he would do this.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Especially missing as much time as he did with a lat strain, absolutely.
Like, the only reason his expectations went up are because of what the Mets have done with everybody else.
Correct. That is fair. And he was their first signing, and they paid him $17 million. But I don't disagree with you. The idea that Montas is doing this is not overly shocking. But yeah, outside of that, you're right. Name another pitcher on the Mets who's performing under what we would have expected, or, you know, underachieving at a level that's obvious. Like, there isn't any of them. I mean, really. Even Brazoban, you wouldn't have thought that going into the season that he'd be all that good. He was all right last year for them. This year he was great for them, and now he's like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was bad last year and got sent down. So you wouldn't have thought Brazoban would be much better this year. He was for a while, and now it's caught up to him. But like Reed Garrett, same thing. He's got a little bit of an up-and-down nature to him where he'll have some streaks of not being good, but overall has been terrific. Even the bullpen, like almost every pitcher on the Mets staff is at the bare minimum of
and
what
Reed
you
Garrett
thought
wasn't
he would
even
be.
A major leaguer before the Mets got him.
Right, exactly.
Or actually before the Stearns era got him, because yeah. With Epler, he also wasn't great.
Yeah. So you could look at every pitcher, bullpen, starter, and outside of Montas, you could say every single pitcher is at least doing as good as we thought he would do. So they're not perfect. The talent level isn't there where you're like, well, I thought he'd be an ace. Like, there aren't guys like maybe Senga. Like, oh, I expected him to be one of the best pitchers in the league. I mean, yeah, we haven't seen that, but we haven't expected that. This is a team built around the offense. The pitching is supposed to be the Lab and Hefner, and that's probably overstated, but the pitching is supposed to be guys that they believe that they can turn into useful, good, solid starting pitchers and then have an offense that is overpowering with big guys at the top paying $300 million contract to Lindor, $700 million contract to Soto, $30 million season for Pete Alonso, the highest paid first baseman. Like, these are the guys that are supposed to carry the team, and they're supposed to be good enough pitching that you're not paying for, so you can pay for the lineup And that's supposed to drive you while the pitching's good enough to win those games. And instead, it's become, over the last year and a half, really, the pitching better be freaking excellent because the offense doesn't score. It's just not who it's supposed to. It's not what it's supposed to be. So we can complain about a pitching staff leading the league in walks. If you want to look at the Mets and tell me the pitching is the problem, I'm going to disagree with you. Jose in Waterbury, what's up, Jose?
Hey, how you doing, CJ?
Good. How are you, brother?
Long time no. I'm blessed. I'm blessed. Love the show. I don't get to call every night, but I do listen.
Well, thank you.
I'll try and make it quick. 2 points. Number one. I'm not a Boone fan. I'm actually hoping they get rid of Boone. I know you like Boone, so
That's okay.
But we can agree to disagree. Your caller just called and said that he thought Boone learned how to coach because he stood behind his guy, Bednar, and all that.
Yeah.
But he just did the same thing with Williams, and it backfired, and he sucked as a coach. So what is it? I mean, you can't
He stuck with him.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree with you. I think there is a difference in what Bednar is and what Williams has been, to be fair. But, yeah, I don't disagree with you. You're right. He stuck with Williams. Now, he didn't go out there and talk to Williams necessarily like the way he did with Bednar. But, yeah, he's in a situation that made absolutely no sense to stick with Williams. He did. And then yesterday, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. They worked out yesterday. That's the only difference. And that's the difference between good managers and bad managers. I'll tell you the truth. The difference is, do the players back up his decisions with good play or not? That's what it comes down to. Like, you know,
you were World Series Chris. I was like, I need mental health after he left Bednar in the game. So I hope he doesn't do it again.
Yeah,
but
well, I recognize
results. Results tell you if you're a good coach.
Of course. I wasn't World Series Chris. Don't get me wrong. It was a good, solid win. And I was pumped up that they won the game. God knows they needed it. So, yeah, was I excited? Of course. Was I terrified that leaving Bednar in was the wrong call? Of course. I was worried he was going to give up a hit. He walked the guy and gave up a hit. And thrown 40 pitches. I was terrified he was going to give up a base hit and blow the game and they would lose. The minute that game gets tied, you know they're losing. So, yeah. Don't get me wrong. And I'm not sitting here today saying they've done anything other than cool off the, you know, keep the hounds at bay for a little bit. Like, that's it. Like, that's all they've done. That's a big win just to settle things down for a moment and take a deep breath today before starting a series against the Astros tomorrow. Like, the Yankees haven't done anything. The Yankees haven't turned it around. Boone isn't suddenly a great manager this year. Like, nothing, none of that. I thought he made a good decision pinch hitting for Goldschmidt, and he stuck with his guy, and it worked out. He's done things before that have worked out. I know you don't think this. I know you think every decision Aaron Boone has ever made has been the wrong one. But the dude's been here for 8 years. They've won a hell of a lot of games. He has a top 10 winning percentage in the history of baseball, and they went to the World Series last year. That doesn't mean he should keep his job forever. It doesn't even mean he should keep his job after this season. But it does mean, believe it or not, there are days like yesterday where he made decisions and it turned out correct. Nobody remembers them. That's my point. Nobody remembers them. We only remember the ones that go astray. That's it. We remember the losses. No one remembers the wins. The win happened, you turn the TV off, and you go, oh, thank God I won. Or we won. They lose, you sit in it, you stew in it, you watch the post game, you go over it, you call me and say what an idiot he is. They win, you forget about it on to the next game. Good win. That's it. That's why it feels like he lost 7 or 8 games, because you don't give him any of the he won that game. And I'm not asking you to, but then don't tell me he lost all these games when we never mention the times where he made a right call. We will today for this moment because it's off the miserable call and it's a big win, but this will be forgotten too. No one will care. No one will care, but yes, but the main point of this, the Yankees haven't done jack squat. They won a big game, big whoop. They lost 2 out of 3 to Texas. Great. I'm happy they won the game. It was much needed. And it gives us a time to breathe with a day off heading into a big series. But, you know, and it was a big game because it won the tiebreaker over Texas as well for the wild card standings. And now they're a game and a half up, really 2.5 over Texas because of the tiebreaker. And it just gives you a moment to breathe. But they've won 1 out of their last 6 games. They got a hell of a lot more to work to do before I'm overly pleased. It was a good win. You move on. Now go take 2 out of 3 from Houston.